Think long and hard for this morning's children's prom. So let's go live to join Louise Fryer now at the Royal Albert Hall and her extra special guest, coming from a foxhole somewhere in South Kensington to make his prom's debut, it's Basil Brush.
Crikey! What a noise backstage! I must go somewhere quiet to prepare for this concert, so if I go along this corridor here, and just along this corridor here, crikey, it's like a rabbit warren, past the gents, past the ladies, still queuing, love, all right, and I come along here, and I come to a ladder here, and if I climb this ladder, Basil Brush will appear here! Woo! Crikey! Look at all you lot sat sitting down there and over there and behind me there and up there and up there and right up there and right up there and, oh, I think I've just cricked me neck. Hey, welcome to the glorious Royal Albert Hall and this magnificent BBC prom concert. And boys and girls, if you're up for a good time, give me a big whee-oo. Give me a whee. Give me a rick-tang diggy diggy ding ding boo! You daft lot. Now, I'm going to say hello, boys and girls, and I want you to shout back to me, hello, Basil, as loud as you can so we're all friends. Here we go. Hello, boys and girls! Hello, the mums! Hello, the dads!
Hello, dads.
Hey, this is great, you lot. You're very noisy, but not as noisy as the lot I've just left backstage. I really wasn't expecting that kind of racket. Louise told me I would hear some lovely tunes today. She's got to explain to us fox fangs what's gone wrong. Louise, where are you, Louise? Are you at the bottom of the ladder? Louise?
Basil, I'm here.
Hello, Louise.
Hello, Basil. And hello, everybody. Basil, have you told them what a great time we're going to have this morning?
I was waiting for you to arrive because so far, I'm afraid, all I've heard are noisy toot-tooters backstage. And they weren't that tuneful. I think they need their X-Factor tuning device fixed.
That's because they were still tuning up, but I'm pretty sure they're ready now for our first piece of music.
Okay.
They are brass players from the Aurora Orchestra and the National Youth Chamber Orchestra, and they're going to play a canzon by Giovanni Gabrielli.
Thank you.
that was a canzon by Giovanni Gabrielli, played by four trumpets, three trombones and a tuba. They were brass players from the Aurora Orchestra and the National Youth Chamber Orchestra with assistant conductor Graham Ross. Fantastic sound, didn't you think, Basil?
Ah, yes, great sound, but, you promised me there would be a principal conductor. And I don't mean a lightning conductor. I don't want a bus conductor. I want a real conductor, a maestro!
Of course we're going to have a proper maestro. I think if we all give him a huge round of applause, he'll come out on stage. So put your hands together for our conductor this morning, Nicholas Collin. Basil, this is Nick.
Hello, Basil. Nice to meet you.
Hello, 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 Nick. Crikey, he's got quite a firm handshake for a conductor. Listen, Mush, I've got a bone to pick with you. Now, it's great to meet a real maestro with so much hair, but I thought there was going to be an enormous orchestra with violins, cellos, flautists, clarinetists, kettle drums for me cup of tea at the interval, all sorts of instruments, not just tooters tooting like they're in tooting up there.
Well, this next piece of music might help. It's by a composer called Jean-Baptiste Lully.
Who?
Jean-Baptiste Lully.
What's his last name?
Lully.
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 You say it like that, mate. You don't go Lully, you go Lully. Who is this,
Lully
chap, anyway?
Well, Lully was a French composer who lived over 350 years ago.
Right.
And for the next piece, he needed more than just the brass section up there. He wrote it for a small orchestra.
Hmm.
And it's written to be danced to. So today we've got some Afro-Brazilian capoeira dancers.
And the dance is called Pour les Pêcheurs, which means for the fishermen in French. And the Aurora Orchestra are going to be joined on stage by the capoeira dance group Cordão de Ouro.
But Maestro Nick, you can't start. The members of your gigantic orchestra aren't here yet.
Don't worry about that, Basil. Nick's got it all sorted. That's what conductors do.
Thank you.
Pêcheur, a dance from Lully's opera Alceste, and it was performed by the Aurora Orchestra and the Capoeira dance group Cordão de Ouro.
Hang on a minute. Maestro Nick, I can still hear drumming in my ears. The drummers haven't stopped yet, and they appear to be drumming on themselves. Do you want to tell them to stop, or shall I ask them musically to refrain?
No, don't tell them to stop yet, Basil. Oh. They're showing us the rhythm for our next piece of music.
Oh, well, I better find out if everybody's ready for your next piece of music. Audience, are you ready?
Yeah!
That's you great. Don't sound ready. Are you ready?
Yeah!
That's better.
How about you, Basil?
I was born ready.
But what have I got to be ready for, Mr. Maestro Nick?
Well, our next piece of music features a really big part for the drum kit, right, which is going to be played by our percussionist, Henry. Give us a wave, Henry.
Woo! Hello, Henry!
We thought to get Henry in the right mood for his piece, we'd turn the Royal Albert Hall into one big drum kit. Ooh. Now, at the top of a drum kit, we've got a hi-hat cymbal, which sounds like this. Owen, show us your hi-hat. Thank you, Owen. How about turning the top of the Albert Hall into our hi-hat cymbal? This is everyone in the gallery in the circle watching Owen. Got your claps ready after four. One, two, three, four. Great, you have to watch out though, because if you get too much faster, we'll be in trouble. So stick with Owen over here. In the middle of our drum kit, we've got the snare drum. Show us what you're going to do, Sam. Hmm? Easy, isn't it?
That's tricky, Sam. That's tricky.
What do we give the most simple thing to? Probably the choir. Anyone behind me is going to get Sam's rhythm. Watching Sam, and watch out the first beat, nothing happens. So it goes like this. One, two, three, four. Fantastic choir, even better, I may say, than the gallery in the circle. But what can you expect? They paid more. Right down here, we have the arena and the stalls with the bass drum. Matt, show us what you're gonna do. Excellent. Good, that'll give you a bit of a workout to get you in the mood. Fantastic, we've got three elements of our drum kit. I just think we need one more, but I can't think...
I've got an idea, Maestro Nick.
What's
that? About a couple of my boom booms?
What a great idea. I never thought you'd say that, Basil.
I know, neither did the audience.
Okay, fantastic. Why don't we try, Louise, if you give us a couple of claps. So it'll go clap, clap, boom boom.
Boom boom.
Brilliant. Okay, let's try it with everyone in the boxes. Ooh. In your foxiest voice. Here we go. After four. One, two, three, four.
Clap, clap. Boom, boom. Boom, boom. Can't hear you. Boom, boom. Boom, boom.
Brilliant.
That's it. We'll be the loudest.
Thank you very much, boxes. Why don't we make a little piece out of that, putting it all together? But before we do that, three little things we have to know. This means let's get louder. This means let's get softer. And this, the most important one, means stop. Exactly. Fantastic. Are we ready in the arena and stalls? We're going to start with the bass drum, then we're going to add the choir, then we're going to add the cymbal at the top, and lastly, we're going to add some very foxy boom booms. Watching carefully. So we don't rush. Here we go with the bass drum down at the bottom. Arena and stalls. A one, two, three, four. Ready in the choir. At the top with Owen. Boxes with Basil.
Boom, boom. Boom, boom. Boom, boom.
Great boom. I could do that boom booming all day, Maestro Nick.
Well, you were fantastic, and so was everybody else here. Give yourselves a huge round of applause.
Lovely. Right. Okay. Maestro Nick, what's next? Is it another boom boom piece by any chance?
No, this one's a beep beep piece.
I beg your pudding.
It's a beep beep piece. Listen to this.
Ooh, that sounds a bit high, that does. Sounds like a noise Samuel would make from Third and Bird.
That's because it's meant to sound like a bird.
Oh, right, okay.
An American bird. A bit like a cuckoo, but with long legs. A bird called a roadrunner. And that's the name of our next piece.
Oh, I know a roadrunner. He's always running after that annoying Wile E. Coyote lovely fellow. And he does a beep-beep sound and does this. Beep, beep, ah! Oh.
Careful, Basil. Well, the American composer John Adams was inspired by the cartoon Roadrunner, so he wrote a piece using that very sound. And if you listen very carefully, Basil, you might just hear some beep beeps in the third movement of his chamber symphony, Roadrunner.
Thank you.
was the third movement of John Adams' Chamber Symphony, Roadrunner, performed by the Aurora Orchestra, conducted by Nick Collen. Did you manage to hear the beep beeps, Basil?
All the beep beeps, and some of them in the right places, Will. But I think I'd rather stick to my boom booms, if you don't mind.
I don't mind. But how are you at singing, Basil?
Oh, I'm glad you asked that. I'm an expert. I'll demonstrate for you, you see, because my voice has been known to make grown men cry. Cry, stop it, we can't take it any longer. Boom, boom. I tell you what, Louise, I shall demonstrate. Orchestra, can I have an A? An E? A consonant? Right, I'm ready now. You'll like this. Oh, solo mio, oh me, oh my.
That's beautiful.
I think I've started my song too high. I'll hit notes of such a height because my pants are far too tight. Thank you.
Not singing yet, Basil. You have to wait for the audience to join in.
Oh, I'm very sorry, ladies and jelly spoons. All right, then. What do we have to do, then, Mush?
Well, try singing this, Basil. I'm at the Royal Albert Hall.
I know you're at the Royal Albert Hall. All right. Okay. I'm at the Royal Albert Hall.
Okay, great. Why don't you get your side of the hall, everyone on this side of the hall, to sing that with you?
All right, then. Okay, here we go. After three, my side. One, two, three.
I'm at the Royal Albert Hall.
Hey, they're very good.
Beautiful. Yeah. Let's see if our side can do it even better, just to prove to Basil that we're even better than he is. After three, or one, two, three. I'm at the Royal Albert Hall. Marginally. So, Basil, why don't we try your side followed by my side?
All right, then. Yeah, my side's going to be louder. All right.
I'll bring you in.
Yeah, count me
in. One, two, three.
I'm at the Royal Albert Hall. I'm at the Royal Albert Hall.
Brilliant. Now that is just a musical conversation where we're trying to make the same point, but at different times.
Right.
And that's called a fugue. Mm-hmm. And we're going to play the full version of a fugue by a composer called Johann Sebastian Bach.
Oh, right.
Thank you.
Fugue was originally by Johann Sebastian Bach, and we heard it today in an arrangement by Chris Willis, performed by the Aurora Orchestra, conducted by Nick Collin.
I think you missed some people out there.
Oh, sorry, Basil, with a fantastic introduction by all of us here, including you, Basil.
Thank you. Right. Now, Louise, where are we off to now?
Hungry?
Oh, yes. Just a little peckish. Is it ice cream time? You did promise me ice creams. I'm in the mood for dark chocolate ice cream. Hundreds and thousands of
no.
chocolate stick and a 99.
Basil, no, not hungry. Hungary, the country. That's where our next piece of music is from.
All right, keep your spotty dress on. I was just getting carried away thinking about ice cream. Picturing Nick sitting on his podium with ice cream in one ear and jelly in the other ear.
What would that make him?
A trifle deaf. Boom, boom! I had to get one in.
Very funny, Basil. But we ought to let the orchestra get on with our next piece to take us through to the interval.
OK.
It's the Hungarian Dance No. 5 by Johannes Brahms.
Yes.
Performed by the Aurora Orchestra, conducted by Nick, with dancing from Basil Brush.
You what? What? But, what? OK.
That was Johannes Brahms' Hungarian Dance No. 5, arranged by Ian Farrington, performed by the Aurora Orchestra with Nick Collin, and fabulous dancing by Basil Brush. What did you think of it, Basil?
Nurse, I need some help. Nurse. No, it was fantastic, actually. If that was No. 5, I hate to dance the number 1, 2, 3, and 4. But I've got to say, it was a brilliant first half, and all that hungry dancing has made me very, hungry.
Well, it's a good job. Now's a perfect time to have an ice cream. It's
we'll
interval time.
We'll see you back here in 20 minutes.
OK, boom, boom, Albert Hall. See you after the ice cream.
Well, while Basil Brush trots off to the ice cream kiosk ahead of Louise Fryer and the conductor Nicholas Collin, here on Radio 3, it's time for this morning's interval programme, My First Prom. Do you remember your first visit? We join a music lover now as he attends his first ever prom concert, weaving his way through the memories of performers and patrons, novices and connoisseurs.
My name is Russell Miller and I'm going to be going to the Royal Albert Hall tonight to attend my first proms. I'm looking forward to going tonight because I'm trying to expand my musical horizons a bit and move away from listening solely to, you know, electronic music, and I'm looking forward to seeing something new. I'm really nervous. There's a blue sign, Arena Day Tickets Queue, one ticket only per person, £5 per ticket, cash only. We're in the cheap seats, aren't we? Can't believe this. Right, there's a chap eating a banana. The usual things I attend, people are drinking cans of super strength lager outside. Can I ask you a couple of questions about coming to the proms? I'm a first timer, so what can you tell me about the experience I'm going to have?
Just a great atmosphere. Well, you can move around, you can sit down on the floor if you get fed up with standing up.
And feeling bohemian.
Yeah.
Did you specifically choose this performance to come to?
Mostly Beethoven, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, who can beat him?
Who could beat Beethoven? I'm expecting the kind of people to be there to be a real mix, but I guess there's going to be more of your stereotypical middle-class person there as opposed to, you know, balding, bearded, tattooed graphic designer, I think. But again, I'm hoping to be wrong.
There's a promenader's code in front here. And wow. One year, one lady was trying to push herself in front of us, wasn't she? And somebody beside us said, we don't say anything, but it's recognised amongst all these promenaders that we don't push in, get back.
Seeing as I have to choose my position, well, when you're promenading, where do you normally stand?
As far forward as possible.
Brilliant. Thanks very much.
Enjoy it.
Yeah, you too.
Or you could say you're with us.
Look how nice everybody is.
People are like this
at hip-hop gigs.
So they're £5,
it's very cheap.
Thank you.
Thank you. I always think of the last night of the proms with people wearing Union Jack bowler hats and singing Jerusalem, which is not my thing at all, you know. So I'm hoping that I'm just being a complete idiot about what I think about it, and I think it's going to be wonderful. Wow. Oh, my word. Looking up at the domed ceiling is quite spectacular. There's a water feature in the middle of the floor, which I wasn't expecting. I'm really thirsty.
I'm Richard Coles, and I remember my first prom. The thing I remember most vividly about the Albert Hall was the white discs hanging from the roof, which I thought were kind of fascinating, looking up there and seeing these sort of strange, like, flying saucers flying around the top of this enormous building. I remember it being just incredibly big and incredibly exciting, this real sense of occasion. And then the orchestra coming out onto the platform, and then the conductor, and it just was very heady stuff. And then the music, which was just enchanting. I was sort of completely bowled over by it.
I'm Susie Klein. I present the proms on Radio 3 and for television. I first started going to the proms when I was a very young teenager, and I would do that dutiful thing of standing in line, hanging out with everybody, taking my picnic. I was a real proms geek. There is something really particular about queuing outside this monumental building, and you get in there and it is like a combination of the biggest theatre you've ever been in and a kind of Roman amphitheatre. It has this gladiatorial thing. And as a promenader, you are so close to some of these performers, you can see the whites of their eyes. It gives it a real kind of frisson that you just wouldn't usually get in a quite polite space.
Do you think it's a uniquely British thing, the proms?
I'd actually go so far as to say uniquely English thing. This is where all the listeners in the north will be done, and Wales will be tuning out.
You're talking to a borderer, so...
That's absolutely fine. You're talking to a German. And the beauty of it is that you'll get all nationalities in here, largely because we like the Englishness of it. I don't know that there really is anything comparable. I mean, I'm always very struck about the youthfulness of the audience you get at early music events these days, but it's not the same mix that you get here. You know, here around the fountain, we've got a chap who first came to the proms in the 1930s, who can remember being at the Queen's Hall, down to people who are in their teens, barely out of school. And it's a fantastic mix.
So you get all sorts of culture types.
You get absolutely everything in here. One of the faces you used to recognise, I haven't seen him so far this season, it was one of the government's medical chief advisors. And you'd see him standing at the front of the fountain during the concert, then you'd get home in time for Newsnight, and there he'd be pontificating.
I noticed the fountain as soon as I came in. Is this a particularly proms thing?
I honestly couldn't tell you. It's been here as long as I've been coming. Normally, it's got all sorts of inflatable fauna in it. This year, it had an inflatable Dalek, which, dare I say it, got brutally confiscated by the hall authorities.
I wish I'd known. I would have brought some kind of comedy crocodile to pop in there.
Well, there's a decoy duck in there at the moment. As far as I'm aware, there's no German spy underneath, but you can have a look.
It'd be a Russian spy these days, wouldn't it?
Well, you never know.
No comment. So then we're going to get a drink and talk to somebody else before we kick off at 7:30. Let's hit the bar.
We have Carlsberg, Grolsch, Asahi, Osbeckle Hen, Magnus and Guinness.
Do you think that younger, sort of fashionable people like yourselves have been attracted to the proms?
It's a mixture of two different influences. My grandparents always go, and I never went before because I thought it was really uncool, but right. Then I've been getting into a lot of classic literature and classical music recently. I've seen local things in churches, but I've never been to a concert before, so...
Wow. The main thing I'm worried about is my stomach's going to rumble at, like, a really quiet bit or something. There's a rule, like, you're not supposed to clap in between symphonies or something. Like, there's some sort of rules. I'm just only going to clap when other people clap.
That's good advice. I'm going to follow that. Where did you stand the last time you came? Were you
kind of at the middle because I had snuck a can of Stella in, so I didn't want anyone to see me drinking it.
Have you got contraband alcohol on you now?
Yeah.
we might have to confiscate that.
Yeah, I'm gonna.
There's a real mixture of people here, from your kind of pashmina wearing South Kent resident to your bleached blonde hair art student. I went to see the Wu-Tang Clan last week, Brixton Academy. For such similar pursuits, their absolute chasm between them, I don't know what it is. Street culture, I suppose, compared to concert culture. It's time to drink up and go inside. Yeah, it's really filled up. Oh, this is it. Someone's left their phone on. Oh my dear. Is that... That's not real. So this is going to be Andre Boreiko conducting the Beethoven thing. Old-fashioned choice to wear a mandarin collar.
I'm Felicity Lott. My first prom, as far as I can remember, was with the Welsh National Opera doing Sir Michael Tippett's Midsummer Marriage. I'd never been to the proms, and I couldn't believe this audience, which was so extraordinary and so quiet, all these people standing for ages and ages. And the atmosphere in the place was amazing. It was glorious to sing in, which was a huge surprise because it's such a big place, and I always thought I had a small voice. Well, I've got a small voice. It was the first time I ever thought I could actually sing the piece, was in that great acoustic, and with the help of the audience, which gave you such an amazing boost.
My name's Khayyam Alami. I play the oud, the Middle Eastern lute, and this year I made my proms debut. I was very excited about having a prom, but also the responsibility of such an event really weighed on my shoulders. My family are Iraqi from Baghdad, so as much as they're part of the culture, I don't think they really understood the grandness of a place like the Royal Albert Hall or the proms as a festival and what kind of music is normally performed as part of it. The atmosphere that night was electric. The majority of the audience were Iraqis or Arabs, so they were very, very excited to be there. And there were so many members of the audience who were shouting at each other across the hall and telephoning each other and waving to each other. And when we got on stage, you could feel that there was a spark and the atmosphere was really energetic.
Sublime. Melvin Bragg hair. I would kill for Melvin Bragg hair. I think he's right. Is that the charity thing? I don't know what that is. Excuse me. Do you know what heave-ho, why people shout that out?
Because there's more people coming in and we really want us to move forward a bit.
Well, my friend just said it was when they lift the piano lid.
Oh, right.
It's like lifting the piano onto the stage.
That sounds more like.
It was my first ever concert. It was James Loughran conducting the BBC Symphony Orchestra. And it was the summer of 1970 and I was 8 years old. And my dad brought me down to London for a treat. I remember we had dinner in the revolving restaurant on the top of the post office tower, which was so cool. My first taste of Vichyssoise. And then we went to the Albert Hall and it was Beethoven's Seventh Symphony. And apparently I stood on the chair and started conducting along to the grotesque embarrassment of my father, whom I wouldn't have blamed if he'd given me a clip round the ear, but he didn't. It was a sort of love at first sight experience for me, or love at first hearing, and I still remember it vividly.
My first television memory was when I was presenting the BBC Four proms, and the conductor was held up backstage. I think there was a tear in his jacket, or he'd gone to the loo. And somebody just said in my ear, OK, Susie, just keep talking. And I did, and I did. And they sat a guest in very quietly. And I think it was a full 12 minutes of filling. Probably isn't a long time when you're just doing the ironing or making a cup of tea and pottering around. But when you have to talk for 12 minutes with authority, that was a real baptism of fire. It's like the classic worst first night you could ever have. And I sort of was wrung out by the end of it and a bit sweaty and a bit hot and bothered. But it was fantastic. I was like, oh, I like this. This is fun.
Waiting backstage, it was quite funny actually because Lucy Duran from World Roots was presenting. She had a long script that she was reading before it was time for me and Andrea to go on stage. And we didn't have a copy of the script backstage. So every time she said my name, me and the stage manager, we thought that it would be my turn to go on. So we just kept opening the door and closing the door, opening the door and closing the door, which at first was a little bit frustrating because you just want to go on stage and play. But because of the comedy value and the amount of times that it was repeated, by the time we actually got to going on stage, we were already laughing from what was happening backstage. So it's much easier to be calm.
When the pianist came on and did his solo thing, I mean, it was just beautiful. And the bass as well, I mean, I can't believe the bass, how you could isolate it as you were listening to it. And you could actually hear them hitting it when the percussion kicks in. I mean, it is that same dynamic that rock music has and hits you in the inside.
I've been coming here since 1942.
Oh my God.
Generally here known as Dick B.
Dick B. What keeps bringing you back to the proms?
So far, I'm concerned, an annual pilgrimage for me. In 1942, as a Londoner, we normally went away from London during the summer holidays. But then my sister went to the Guildhall School of Music and Drama, and it was from her that I learnt about the promenade concerts. So I started then, and I've come every year since. Mother had first gone to the proms in 1912 at the Queen's Hall, but she never told us. I was about 17. I can remember one thing, and that was the Emperor Concerto played by Clifford Curzon, who must have been quite a young man at the time. It was the first season here, because Queen's Hall, you see, had been bombed on the 10th of May 1941. The audiences were bigger than they are now, much more crushed, you see, and so on. And I think at that time, cigarette smoking was permitted.
Oh, did you indulge in?
I didn't. No, I'm a non-smoker. Well, they brought little things to put their ash in. To...
Like a portable ashtray or something?
That's right, yes.
My God. Mm. Yeah, what are they? They look like suspended mushrooms.
Yes, look like mushrooms. They are to reduce the echo. Well, I can remember hearing one soprano's top sea three times at one go.
So it really does make a massive difference then?
Oh, yes. It's...
And how? What, would you come every day? Or
I don't now, no. I'm cutting it down particularly. I've come to just over 20, I think it is, this season. But I used to come to about 40 or so.
Do you always promenade, is it called? Do you always promenade?
I do, but these days, owing to my legs, which are very bad, I'm one of a small group that have permission to come in a few minutes early and take one of the seats.
Perfect.
So I'm sitting around the fountain, you see. Well,
thank you very much for talking to us, Dick. It's a pleasure to meet you.
So far, you have donated over £45,000. Thank you.
I hope I'm still coming to gigs when I'm 89. And the Wu-Tang Clan will still be playing. They'd be a bit old then, wouldn't they?
Another memorable prom was when my daughter was just born, and I think the first concert I did after she was born was Semele at the proms, and then I did the four last songs at the proms very shortly after that. I remember those proms quite vividly, with my daughter in the dressing room behind crying, wanting attention and food.
After the prom was just crazy. It was fantastic to just see my friends and family, people from the Iraqi community who'd come to support us. I think it was a really emotional event. I would go back to the proms. I would be more than happy to perform again every year for the rest of my life.
Everybody's on their feet, trying to get the conductor to come back on for one more rock star-like bow. I wonder if he insists on being called maestro. There he goes, walks off with his crew. That's the end of it. You been before?
No, it's our first time. I mean, it's Richard's, he's been here quite a few times.
Who's here, your dad?
He's a music teacher.
Oh, you're a music teacher. Come here, music teacher, you're going to talk to us. You've led them all here, have you?
Yes, indeed. Yep. First ever proms. It was a wonderful occasion. I mean, I've been coming to the proms down the years. These days, I sort of tend to sit at home and listen to it on the radio, but you can't beat the live occasion.
When was your first prom?
As a student. I remember I was up on the very top, and Boulez was conducting the Rite of Spring with the BBC Symphony Orchestra. And I had a score, and I was following it avidly, because you couldn't see anything, but that was my first experience.
How did you all find it?
It was extraordinary, just like being in the theatre, you know, you feel all the clapping and all the music just coming straight at you, yeah.
Would you come back again? Are you going
to... Oh, definitely, I think we can say that, yeah.
And I have to say, actually, I thought the atmosphere with the promenaders was just brilliant. Everybody that's here just absolutely loves music, and I've never been in a situation when the lights go down and the orchestra strikes up, nobody moves, and it's just so wonderful. I think it's something we're going to remember for a long time.
Have you been to any other music concerts before, you know, anything like a gig?
What did we see last night?
Oh, funnily enough, yeah, we did see a musical of Avenue Q. Yeah.
It was fantastic,
yeah,
wasn't
it? Was,
yeah. But this was just as brilliant, yeah. But in a completely different way. I think everybody should come.
Do you play any instruments? Do you play any...
Yeah, my music teacher teaches me piano, and I'm working on my grade 4 at the moment. And at school I'm learning trumpet and doing my grade 6.
So would you hope to play on the stage at the... Well, yeah, Hall one day.
It certainly puts some ambition, you know, to reach out for something. And yeah, and just watching, you know, the trumpets at work, and especially when the piano was brought on, and getting that amount of applause.
Great. Well, I hope you do. I hope you achieve it one day. So I'm no longer a proms virgin. Feels good. I think I'll be back. Cheers.
Nice.
That was quite an amazing experience, really. I think I'm going to go for a drink, and then I'm going to go home to Brixton. Can we stop now? I'm sick of the sound of my own voice.
My First Prom was produced by Debbie Kilbride. And, Russell, if you're listening to us now, you may like to know that that concert by the Russian National Orchestra and Andrei Boreko gets another airing here on Radio 3 on Wednesday afternoon from 20 past 2 onwards. Well, we'll be going back to the Royal Albert Hall to rejoin Basil Brush and Louise Fryer for this morning's concert in a couple of minutes. In the meantime, here's some Russian piano music. Three pieces here from Tchaikovsky's Album for the Young. And if you're a ballet lover, you may well recognise the first of them. Three pieces from Tchaikovsky's Album for the Young. First was a Neapolitan dance tune, which, as I said, you may have recognised from Swan Lake. Then a nursery tale, and that last short piece was called The Witch. Well, there's more witchcraft at the proms tomorrow night when you can hear Humperdinck's opera Hansel and Gretel at 7 o'clock. But I wonder what's been happening over at the Royal Albert Hall this morning. Let's return now to Louise Fryer and the conductor Nicholas Collin and see if Basil Brush has finished his ice cream yet.
Oh, this is lovely ice cream. This is... Just got to finish it off and go right down to the bottom and... Oops. I think I have a problem. That's better. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the second half of our show. I tell you... Oh, look. Look, the stage is full of musicians. Where did they all come from? I think we Fox fans need an explanation. Louise, all-knowing Louise. Come here, Louise.
Basil, it's fine. They're supposed to be here.
Yes?
The Aurora Orchestra have been joined by members of the National Chamber Choir for Children and the National Youth Chamber Choir to make a huge, big orchestra that's going to make a great, big, fantastic sound. So let's welcome back our conductor, Nicholas Collin.
Thank you. Maestro Nick, would you like me to help you conduct? You see, I think my tail and my brush would be perfect to keep all this orchestra in time.
Well, that's very kind of you, Basil, but I think we probably should be all right. But you better watch out, because this next piece is about a very angry bee, and he might just be looking to sting someone.
It's by Nikolai Rimsky-Korsakov.
Hang on a minute, Louise. I've got a little bee in my bonnet about this one. Or should I say, I've got a bee in my brush. And this bee in my brush is putting me off because he's humming.
A bee in your brush who's humming? Why?
Well, everybody knows that bees hum because they don't know the words. Boom, boom. Hey, Louise, what? You keep setting them up and I'll keep knocking them down. All right, listen.
Very funny, Basil. This is a piece with lots of humming and buzzing. It's The Flight of the Bumblebee by Nikolai Rimsky-Korsakov. Now, let's see if I can get the performers right this time. They are the Aurora Orchestra, the National Children's Chamber Orchestra, and the National Youth Chamber Orchestra, and they were performing The Flight of the Bumblebee by Nikolai Rimsky-Korsakov.
That's easy for you to say, Louise, but I have to say, that bumblebee sounded very angry.
Well, almost as angry as one of the families in our next piece of music, the Capulets.
Really? This is far too nice a concert to have all these angry people around.
Well, the Capulets were only angry because they had some uninvited guests at the ball that they were holding. The rival family in town, the Montagues, had decided to gatecrash their ball.
Ooh.
This next piece is named after both families, the Montagues and the Capulets, and it's taken from Prokofiev's ballet score to Romeo and Juliet.
Oh, Romeo and Juliet, Shakespeare! I know all about Shakespeare. I had rave reviews for my bottom in A Midsummer Night's Dream, and I also know everything about Romeo and Juliet because I played the part famously at school years ago. You'll like this.
Basil, that's Juliet's line.
Yeah, I know. She forgot to turn up, so I had to do them both.
Well, we're going to hear The Montagues and the Capulets from Prokofiev's ballet music Romeo and Juliet. It takes place at a ball, and it's the ball where Romeo and Juliet first meet. So we thought we'd have some dancers too. B-Boy's Attic. Basil?
Well, I just wanted to join in with the dancers. I've just got me a little mask to join in.
Well, the dancers were fantastic. Yes. And our masked performers were Nia Davis and Alan Riley from Metamorpho. And that piece of music was by Eric Sati, his Gymnopédie number one. Shall I take your mask off now?
Go on then, yeah. Thank you very much, Lee. You're welcome. And I'll take yours off too. Oh, I tell you what, Mr. Nick, I'm loving this big orchestra. So, what's next?
Well, next is a piece by Dmitri Shostakovich.
Dmitri shot a what itch?
Oh, Shostakovich.
Dmitri's got a bottom itch.
No.
Dmitri's got a bottom itch, kids!
Nearly. Dmitri Shostakovich.
Right.
And like Prokofiev, he's a Russian composer and he was born just over 100 years ago.
We're going to hear a really dramatic piece. It's like a musical whirlwind of non-stop notes. It's the second movement, Allegro, of the Symphony No. 10 by Shostakovich.
We'll be right back.
That was the thrilling second movement, the Allegro, from the Symphony No. 10 by Dmitri Shostakovich.
Louise?
Yes?
Can I do the next serious bit? Is that all right?
It's fine, be my guest.
See if I can get a permanent position on Radio 3.
It was conducted by the Foxbat conductor, Maestro Nick, and played by all those musicians on the stage who really are...
booming marvellous! Well done!
Thank you very much, Basil, but we're not quite finished yet. There's one little challenge for you still to do.
A challenge? That sounds like a bit of a test. Now, I've sat all my SAT tests at school. I don't think I want any more exams. I'm not sure I can do another test.
I think it's quite an enjoyable test. This next piece has little bits of music from every piece that we've played so far in the concert. So I want you all to listen really carefully, see if you can spot them. And you may also be able to see the dancers that we've seen earlier in the concert as well.
Oh, does it mean I get to go boom, boom again?
No, Basil, thanks very much.
Oh, can I get to beep, beep?
Well, if you must, yeah, you can beep, beep. Okay.
And can I do a bit of dancing as well?
I think you can definitely dance, Basil.
Great.
So here are the Aurora Orchestra, the National Children's Chamber Orchestra, and the National Youth Chamber Orchestra, and our dancers too, in Mashup by Chris Willis.
Thank you.
That was Mash Up by Chris Willis, with just a little bit of Gabrielli, Lully, Adams, Bach, Brahms, Rimsky-Korsakov, Prokofiev, Sarti and Shostakovich. And Chris Willis is here, so let's give him a big round of applause.
Woo. Oh, yeah.
Fantastic music, also some fantastic dancing, and the orchestra were fantastic too, weren't they, Basil?
Oh, they were. I think we ought to ask them all to take a bow. Can I start everybody off, Louise?
You can.
All right, boys and girls, let's hear it for the fantastic National Children's Chamber Orchestra and the National Youth Chamber Orchestra.
Say a big thank you to the Aurora Orchestra and their leader, Ruth Rogers.
And also, boys and girls, I want you to scream, shout, stamp your feet, go crazy, throw your grandmothers in the air, and give a big special thank you to the Larry and Harry Maestro Nick!
Thank you, Basil.
There you go.
But we're still not quite finished yet. We've got one more special piece to play, and this is an overture.
Hang on a minute, Mush. I know something about classical music, you know, because at 2, I wrote a concerto. At 3, I wrote a symphony. At 4:30, I went downstairs and made a cup of tea. So I know that an overture normally starts a concert.
Well, now, this
I
is
have
a fantastic
been asking myself,
way.
Hang on a minute, I have been asking myself why there wasn't one today. I've got the script. Listen, we did start with only 8 musicians, and I'm not going to be surprised that you're wanting to end our concert with an overture.
Thank you, Basil. This is a fantastic way to finish a concert, because it's a piece by Leonard Bernstein, who used to conduct family concerts like this all over the world.
And I'm sure Leonard Bernstein would have loved to hear his piece at the end of our concert today. So to round off this bank holiday children's prom, this is Bernstein's overture, Candide.
Thank you.
That was Leonard Bernstein's overture, Candide. Sadly, it brings us to the end of our BBC Children's Prom. I hope you've enjoyed it. I've had a great time. What about you, Basil?
I've had an absolutely fantastic morning. I've boom-boomed, I've beat-beat, and I've bop-bopped. But I have to say, I'd like to thank you all out there for being the best Monday morning audience we've had all week. And I'd just like to say, on behalf of the BBC Proms, everyone here on stage, goodbye and... Boom, 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 Royal Albert Hall!
And boom, boom, back to Basil Brushen fans. After all that music, dancing and ice cream, Basil's returning to his foxhole, having had what sounds like a very exciting time. Louise Fryer was presenting with him on stage, and Nicholas Collin conducted the Aurora Orchestra and members of the National Children's Orchestra and the National Youth Chamber Orchestra. Well, we'll be back at the Royal Albert Hall later today when the BBC Concert Orchestra takes to the stage at 7 o'clock, joined by its new principal conductor, Keith Lockhart. He's making his proms debut, and the programme brings American pizzazz to the Royal Albert Hall, along with classic pieces associated with the Boston Pops, which Keith Lockhart also conducts. Music including William Walton's Spitfire Prelude and Fugue, more from Leonard Bernstein, the symphonic dancers from West Side Story, and music too by Gershwin, John Williams, and much, much more. That's this evening, our second live prom of the day, starting at 7 o'clock here on BBC Radio 3. Well, the time is coming up to 23 minutes to one, and we've a soupçon of French music for the next 20 minutes or so. This is Jean Francais's first wind quintet, played by the Galliard Ensemble. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
The Wind Quintet No. 1 by Jean Francais, written in 1948 and full of bubbling high spirits. As Francais once said, why be sad when you live in Paris? And why indeed? Well, that performance was by the Galliard Ensemble, the flautist Catherine Thomas, the oboist Owen Dennis, clarinetist Catherine Spencer, horn player Richard Bayliss and bassoonist Helen Simons. Well, the Galliard Ensemble are graduates of Radio 3's New Generation Artist Scheme, and I'll just briefly mention that we'll be hearing from a couple more former members during this week in our continuing coverage of the 2010 Edinburgh International Festival. We've four more lunchtime concerts from Tuesday to Friday, and the recitals include performances by the mezzo-soprano Christiana Stottein, that's tomorrow, and the Pavel Haas Quartet on Thursday. And you can hear those concerts starting at 1 o'clock. Well, in a couple of minutes, after the lunchtime news, we go live to Cadogan Hall in London for Proms Chamber Music. The pianist Lars Vogt appeared with the Czech Philharmonic Orchestra yesterday in the evening prom, and today he continues the Czech connection with music by Janáček, along with Schubert, his piano sonata in G, Deutsch 894. First, though, a look ahead to Sundays with Fiona Talkington.
The best thing about presenting Radio 3 requests is going through the post and the emails and seeing what new requests have come in. Listeners have a wonderful way of finding some really unusual pieces to suggest, and I think some of them really enjoy giving us a challenge finding them. I love knowing why they want a particular piece too. Sometimes it's hearing a piece they haven't heard for years. Sometimes it's a special piece to mark an occasion, a birthday or an anniversary. And sometimes they've been inspired by going to a concert and hearing a live performance. To hear your request, do get in touch. Our email address is radio3requests@bbc.co.uk, or you can write to us, BBC Wales, Cardiff, CF52YQ. Radio 3 Requests, Sunday afternoons at 2, here on BBC Radio 3.
This is BBC Radio 3, 90 to 93 FM, on digital radio and online. It's 1 o'clock and time now for the latest BBC news from John Shea.
Pakistan is sending a special team from its Federal Investigation Agency to London to look into allegations of a betting scam involving members of the country's cricket team. A 35-year-old sports agent at the centre of claims that no balls were deliberately bowled against England last week has been released on police bail. Detectives have interviewed four Pakistan players and confiscated three mobile phones. There are growing calls for Pakistan's tour of England to be suspended. Six people have been killed and at least another 13 wounded in Slovakia by a gunman who opened fire on a suburban street in the capital Bratislava. The gunman has not yet been identified, and there's no indication of what may have motivated the attack. A 10-year-old girl is in hospital needing plastic surgery after being mauled by three dogs, two of them Rottweilers, in Dundee. The animals attacked her as she was riding her bike, biting her arms and legs and fracturing her jaw. Police say the dogs will be put down today and their owners may be charged. The team behind the Labour leadership candidate Ed Miliband has hit back at criticism from Lord Mandelson, who said the shadow energy secretary would take the party into what he called an electoral cul-de-sac. Mr Miliband's spokesman said party members and the public would not be convinced by what he called the same old messages from the new Labour attack machine. The United States has condemned as inflammatory remarks by a senior Israeli rabbi who called for Palestinians and their leader Mahmoud Abbas to be struck by a plague. Rabbi Ovadia Yosef, who's the spiritual leader of the right-wing Shas party in Israel's governing coalition, made the comments just days before Middle East talks are due to begin in Washington. China and Russia have agreed to set up their first cross-border protection zone for Siberian tigers, the largest living cats in the world. About 500 are known to be left in the wild, only 20 of them in China. And the weather. There'll be more sunshine this afternoon in many places, but cloud in the east will spread west. Showers and strong winds in eastern and southeastern counties will gradually ease. The news and weather on BBC Radio 3 at 1:02. So now it's time for Proms Chamber Music, live from Cadogan Hall in London. It's presented by Catherine Bott.
Welcome to Cadogan Hall for our penultimate Proms Chamber Music recital. Today's performer is the German pianist Lars Vogt, who first came to international attention in 1990 when he was a prize winner at the Leeds International Piano Competition. And I'm sure he'll have captured every listener's imagination last night with his performance of Grieg's Piano Concerto with the Czech Philharmonic over in the Royal Albert Hall. But we've got him here at Cadogan today. And he's going to play music by Schubert, his late sonata in G major, Deutsch number 894, and to begin, Janáček at his most intimate and reflective. In the Mists is one of his last compositions for solo piano, written in 1912, when the composer was feeling isolated, slighted by the public, and in despair of ever seeing his opera Jenufa staged in Prague. Janáček's biographer has suggested that the mists of the title reflect the composer's low spirits rather than actual meteorological conditions. Many of his chamber works have a direct or indirect autobiographical element after all. The work also reflects his lifelong interest in traditional music. Janáček particularly relished the rhythmic asymmetry of Moravian folk music, and he incorporated some of this irregularity into the third movement. Lars Vogt himself has written that stark contrasts dominate the work in spite of its title that suggests more misty colours. Intentionally, the pieces lack warmth almost entirely. Now, to begin his recital with Janáček's In the Mists, we welcome to the platform Lars Vogt.
Thank you.
Lars Vogt played Janáček's late work In the Mists, and I'm delighted to say he's joined me now, microphone in hand, to talk about today's programme. Lars, these are two late works by composers, both of whom must have felt themselves often to be unloved and unsung. It's very hard to escape the biographical element, but surely, as a pianist, you've programmed these late works by Janáček and Schubert. What do they have in common to play?
I do think they have something in common, which is that the soul is under attack, if you will. That there are these peaceful moments, especially in the Schubert that's going to come now. There are long, long stretches that seem really peaceful, and yet you're never quite safe, and it's never quite true somehow. And then there are incredible outbursts, like we've just heard in the Janáček, which I think are really full of blood and full of anger and, just a soul really under attack, in danger.
And in the late sonatas of Schubert, they're often mistaken for serenity. The moods of a sort of sunny character. But there's a real weariness, isn't there? World weariness as a subtext to some of these works.
It's always ambiguous. And that's the incredible thing that you... In Schubert, it's really delicate to find the line of interpretation. Because if you interpret them as completely depressed pieces, that's also not where it leads. It also has these little bits of... Is it hope? Is it a dream of what it could be like? Or is it actually a memory of something actually nice? Or is it just seeing life from far away and not being part of it? So it always has the two sides at the same time in it. That's why I think interpreting Schubert in a way is just as hard as Mozart. He also has this sort of ambiguity all the time.
Well, there is something you can help us with. Schubert's publisher originally issued this sonata we're going to hear under sort of four discrete titles, really, of the four movements, as if they were four separate pieces: Fantasy, Andante, Menuetto, and Allegretto. And I hope it would have pleased Schubert that a little bit after his life, Schumann declared this sonata to be the most perfect of all of Schubert's piano sonatas. And he referred to the title of the first movement and offered us a bit of a threat, really. He wrote, "Let anyone who lacks the fantasy to solve the riddles of the last movement keep away." What did he mean by that?
I find that just one of these wonderful quotes of Schumann, where in sort of one sentence he hits it on the nail, you know, where what the difficulty is. The last movement, when you sort of look at it, it seems that it's just quite joyful dancing. But when you look at the tempo marking, which is Allegretto, it's not very fast. And the dynamics, which are pretty throughout the movement, pianissimo. And then sometimes these incredibly painful outbursts in forte and fortissimo. And that sort of speaks against a sunny and lovely afternoon. So I think there is a constant riddle really in that piece, and it's wonderful that Schumann calls it a riddle. He also doesn't say it's joyful or it's sad or it's just not quite clear. But I think we cannot quite trust the piece, and we don't know whether this sort of piece in this whole sonata is a bit pathological, of sort of the last moment before somebody being depressed attempt suicide, or whether it's really an outlook into what could have been or what should be.
Well, Schumann didn't offer to solve the riddle, and maybe we won't either, but I'm looking forward very much to hearing you play that, all the four movements. Thank you very much, Lars. By the time Schubert wrote his last sonatas, between 1826 and 1828, the form's popularity was a little bit in decline. So it was actually a rather canny move on the part of his publisher to imply that the work we'll hear now might be four individual pieces, because his public was really showing more of a desire for character lollipops. Of all Schubert's piano sonatas, This is one of only three to have been published during his lifetime. So now Lars Vogt plays Schubert's Sonata in G major, Deutsch number 894.